This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 161B, page 693. Can you believe it? There's about two pages left in this book. but there's so many pieces to pick up still, you know. I'd like to be able to discuss with you the rulerships and the aspects more in terms of applying this in astrology. I have quite a bit of this on the Makara website. By the time you may get to the end of the book here and listen to this, we don't even know if there will be a Makara website or what year this may be when you are considering these thoughts. But for now, it is there, and we'll hope to preserve some of those things in a way which will be useful to people over the years. So, consciousness. It grows quietly, subtly, and how do you know it's grown? You simply are registering more, you're touching more. The field of consciousness has a certain quantity within it. When consciousness grows, the quantity greatly increases, and the connections between the quantities included in the field of consciousness is greatly enhanced. So, who has the more mature consciousness? The one who has a million things in it, or the one who has a million significantly interconnected things in it, such that the connections reflect the archetypes in the world of being? So many times we say, I failed to notice, I didn't see that, I wasn't aware of that, oh, I was unconscious to it, or I don't know where I was, I didn't notice, you know. Consciousness is this subtle sense of touch. And how many items are touched, and to what degree of refinement? In other words, when the touch is made, do we actually know all about the item, or is it a superficial touch? When we begin to identify with the item touched, then consciousness has taken a very deep movement forward. And this would be contemplation, which is in a way knowing all about a content of consciousness by identifying with it and by being it. Otherwise, it's a darkened room, you know, relatively speaking. We have certain things in our content of consciousness, we're aware of them, but like 99% is lying outside, and we are unaware of that 99%. And the percentage of which we are unaware is consisting of units of light. And so we are in many ways living in a darkened room. Thus spoke the mixer as he stood within his darkened chamber. It's a fourth ray law of repulse. And the third ray type is surrounded by a multitude of threads buried in folds and folds of woven goods. The weaver sits. No light can enter where he sits. By the light of a tiny candle carried upon the summit of his head, he dimly sees. Darkened room. And the second ray scholar burrows like a mole until he finds his way into the darkness. There's darkness for all three. And ray five, he's down in a pyramid, and the light of day, the blue of heaven, the trees and flowers opening to the sun, none of that is seen. Darkened. And then ray six, he's rushing along a tunnel, and because it's a tunnel, he sees so little. And ray seven, he sees only chaos in front of him, and the room of ordered beauty, which is behind him, with all its wonders, is largely unregistered. The first ray is different because he has the beautiful garden, and then the garden is destroyed, and then another garden is made. So he's not exactly in a darkened chamber, for whatever reason. Anything to be said here in summation? Well, in our solar system, we're about halfway through. So the fourth chain, fourth globe, and the fourth scheme round for Earth represents halfway through. And maybe Jupiter and Saturn and Vulcan are not halfway through. Mars, about halfway through. Venus, definitely the most advanced, and Mercury a bit more than halfway through its development. Already, some obscuration will begin. Mars is in a temporary state of obscuration, but the planet itself is not really becoming obscured, as in a preparation for absorption. Venus will probably be the first planet to go, and that's something I didn't factor in. If these planets are ready earlier than Saturn begins its absorption, then they can go directly to their planet. Venus to Neptune and Mercury to Uranus without having to be absorbed. That's interesting. Without having to be absorbed by Saturn. So if we have six planets surrounding Saturn and we get rid of Venus and Mercury, then we expose the planet which the Sun veils and which the Moon veils. We'll still have six planets surrounding, and Saturn then will be a sevenfold absorption. The Earth will be one of those. What if, however, Earth should be absorbed into Venus in some way? Then it would never be absorbed into Saturn. It would go with Venus, and all of its principles would be contained within Venus toward Neptune. Well, one day later, we'll see all this happening, if we are still with the solar system. The time scale is altogether other than the human time scale. So some incredible patience is required, but this patience is exactly that which will allow us to see and understand in the eternal now. Until we have mastered some degree of patience, there's no use talking about the eternal now. And maybe if we should get a flash of insight concerning the eternal now, then patience would begin to emerge. A very, very great patience. I did talk about the esoteric schools before. Planets raised in esoteric schools. With Uranus, is it the seventh school? The school seems to respond to the, or correspond to the soul ray, or the personality ray, depending on whether we're dealing with a sacred or a non-sacred planet. And if the monadic ray has not emerged, it will not be considered here. Well, there's this magnificent law of the schools, and this will have to be taken up. I will just say a few things. With Uranus, the school of magic, of course, it's a seventh-ray planet, and magic is about making the archetype appear. Of the tenth order, probably has to do with its first-ray monad, because the ten becomes the one, and we've seen that orders can relate to monadic rays. Probably Betelgeuse, being a star of the second order, may well have the second monadic ray and our solar system the fourth. It also can have to do with where in the cosmic planes a particular planetary logos is associated. The seventh ray is associated with violet. It's the soul ray of Uranus, and its graduates wield the power of cosmic etheric prana, and this tells us how strong Uranus is in relation to the cosmic ethers. It's Uranus that primarily rules the cosmic ethers, and we know what those ethers are. These are the cosmic ethers, these four. The supercosmic ethers are these four. But right now, cosmic ethers are quite enough for us. And the school of the 10th order, well, it's the home of electric fire. It absorbs those beings who are most characterized by electric fire. Maybe there are other schools of magic. But this 10th order tells us something about the wielding, I think, of the power of the first ray, and also the power to produce completeness, since 10 is a true number of perfection, more so than 7. And in a different way than 12. So, on the way to various stellar systems, one can stop as a monad for training on or in a planetary scheme. Well, would the path of absolute sonship in some way lead to the Great Bear, and would Uranus be the planet through which we could reach the Great Bear through the first ray monad of this planet? It has something to do with the seven, and so does the bear. The Pleiades is a different type of destination. It's the final destination for all. And the path to Sirius is quite different, although Uranus could be involved there as well. We have to understand how many schools of magic there might be. It has, this school has a strong etheric effect. And just the way the lower pranas will stimulate the different chakras, so Uranus will stimulate the groupings in the cosmic ethers, which are the chakras of our planetary logos and solar logos. So there are large collections of triads and so forth, and later monads, and Uranus, and they're all on the cosmic ethers, and Uranus has the prana, Uranus has the cosmic prana to stimulate these. Okay, when it comes to the Earth, well, here we are. Maybe it's the third school, where it has a third-ray personality. The school of magnetic response. The magnetism tells us something about the third ray, but also about the first and second. Graduates of Painful Endeavor, another name given to its students, the Graduates of Painful Endeavor, because something is resisting. The outer congestion is resisting the inner pattern. Hence, rending, effort, pain. Or the adjudicators between the polar opposites, which in this case would be soul and personality, or spirit and matter. Its graduates are said to undergo examination on the third subplane of the astral plane. I don't think, let's see here. I don't think this can be the cosmic astral plane, because our solar, our planetary logos has not even reached the cosmic astral plane. The third subplane of the cosmic astral plane, unless of course we're counting from a different level. And who really is a graduate of a planet? Must it necessarily be an initiate of the ninth degree? Must it be an initiate of the eighth or even seventh degree? What about an initiate of the sixth degree? At that time, you can move on from the planet, or you can stay to help if you are tapped, as it were, by Sanat Kumara. Releasing pain and purifying sorrow, is that what it is? Let's see. Releasing pain. Here it is. Releasing sorrow and purifying pain. It is the Gemini-Venus situation which lies behind the fact that our Earth is uniquely the planet of releasing sorrow and purifying pain. The energy producing these releasing factors being focused through Venus, Mercury and Venus upon our Earth. So this is page 361, and I think we should put this in here in green. Esoteric Astrology 361. Okay. So it may be the third subplane of the astral plane on which we find what particular quality. It's not going to be one of the lower subplanes, it's going to be one of the higher subplanes. So if we turn to 188 of Cosmic Fire, we're going to find on the third subplane of the astral plane, clairvoyance. And will that be the manner in which we are to be examined? Why the third subplane? Well, you know, Saturn is connected with choice. It's the third ray. There could be a choice here. Whoop. Don't want that. We want just a simple one. When dealing with number seven, a choice has to be made. And this may have to do, the choice has to do with the attachment. Buddha prepared men for this choice. But it seems strange, doesn't it, that once you've reached fifth initiation, let us say, you could be considered a graduate, that you should have to descend and somehow be submitted to choices involving the third subplane of the astral plane. If it's the third subplane of the cosmic astral plane, it's a very, very great reach, and you would have to already be maybe a seventh or even eighth degree initiate. So that seems a little far-fetched. Well, we have to learn as we adjudicate what is of the soul and what is of the personality. What is of spirit, what is of matter. We are pulled, we are rent. We are pulled and rent and have to decide. We are pulled and rent and have to decide the quality of that which attracts. We have magnetic attraction to both, and we must respond with choice. Yes. Well, you know, in this question of the schools, it's a very marvelous section, and I'll get to that. It's my intention to get to it anyway. On Vulcan, well, it's I don't think, is this the ray given? Or is this, in fact, the which school it happens to be? Okay. Well, I think we have to go into cosmic fire, where this is found, in order really to determine this. This is 1177 and 11. Here it is. Maybe. Yeah, here it is. It is not possible to give fully the types of schools and teaching which is given on the different planets. All that can be done is to give an occult phrase which will convey to the intuitive student the necessary hint. But a type of teaching is being given. We might regard the presiding lives in these departmental schools as the custodians of the path and responsible, therefore, for the divine pilgrim during the final stages of treading the path of evolution. They begin to work with men from the moment they set foot upon the probationary path. So much more about the schools is given here in a treatise on cosmic fire, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. The rulers of these planets, chains, and globes are called divine examiners, and their work concerns the human kingdom specifically and entirely, and they are responsible for the work of, and then transferring men from one school to another, from one grade to another, and so forth. So one must be at least upon the probationary path in order to benefit anything from these planetary schools, right? All right. Let's go on to Vulcan, the school of fiery stones, and how interesting that on Earth the human units are called the school of living stones. The fire, of course, of Vulcan is solar fire, so very close to the sun, and it is a substitute for the sun. There is a curious connection between the human units who pass through its halls, and human units do pass through its halls. So this tells us again, you know, there is a humanity on Vulcan, and also, as we learned, on Venus. So there's a curious connection between the human units that pass through its halls and the mineral kingdom. And, of course, the number four is involved. The mineral kingdom is the fourth from the human, counting downward, isn't it? And the human kingdom, the fourth, from the mineral kingdom, counting upward. And the whole idea of the beauty of the mineral kingdom, the four, and maybe the seven, connected with Vulcan. The human units of the Earth scheme, on the Earth scheme, in the Earth scheme, are called the living stones, and on Vulcan they are called the fiery stones. I guess a kind of first-ray quality is given through these Vulcanian beings, and they have a great deal to do with the release of the energy of the mineral kingdom, and with atomic energy, I would say. With Pluto and Uranus, Vulcanians closely related to the release of energy through the mineral kingdom. The idea of the jewel and the lotus is here, and human being becomes a living stone when it is a diamond soul, just before the destruction of the causal body. Of course, in a way, the jewel is not destroyed. The monad itself is a jewel. And the seven facets of the jewels are doorways, we are told, through which to enter the path, the way of higher evolution. Then how do you enter on path 8 and 9? But okay, we won't worry about that. We need the Vulcanians come here for the education of the second petal and for the love energy which our second race soul can bestow. And if there is any kind of transference of Earth beings going to Vulcan, it would be for the sake of becoming more fiery and having more will. Imagine Vulcan can help Earth beings enter the fiery world. What is the fiery world? Well, the Sea of Fire, of course, in one way, but the cosmic ethers altogether. Vulcanians can help Earth humanity enter the fiery world. And there are certain human beings here, maybe in Capricorn, which is the Earth signs, really. Capricorn, Virgo, even Virgo, Taurus, who have a close connection to the mineral kingdom. The Vulcan is a planet of compression, and it puts pressure, compressing pressure, upon the forms of life. When you're under the pressure of time, you know, Vulcan and Saturn can definitely be present, and you are forced and compelled and confined, pressed on all sides, and as a result you will come out harder, not necessarily crystallized and shatterable, but at least firmer. Vulcan, I think, can help get people, quote, into shape, as it were. In what way does the stone live? Well, a jewel in the lotus is an expression of life, the life of the monad. And through that jewel, monadic life must express. And there's some resurrective quality, redemptive quality, ability to convey life, just as Vulcanians would have the ability to convey fire. Well, we could meditate on this for quite a while, fiery stones, living stones. We do live on an Earth planet, and there is a refinement and a beautifying going on this planet. And when it is achieved perfectly, the number four, then we are able to capture the livingness of the monad. It's not that fiery stones are not alive, and we don't have any idea about the egoic lotuses of those on Vulcan. But they're used to really work in the fire element, and we're used to working with the life aspect, the monad in all forms. So we, on Earth, we become used to working with the livingness of all forms, the monad in all forms. And redemptively, we evoke the life. Well, you know, let us meditate on this. Vulcan, in a way, helps us fashion the jewel in the lotus or utilize the jewel in the lotus. Vulcan helps us fashion or utilize the jewel in the lotus, and maybe we here help Vulcan with some of the unfoldment of the petals of the softer kind, perhaps. Jupiter, more magic. It's the second ray, the soul ray, the school of beneficent magicians. Beneficence, or the good, you know, is always associated with Jupiter. The good is a the good is based on the completion of the and archetypally envisioned pattern. So the good has to have a fullness to it, a rounded out quality. In the parlance of the schools, this planet is sometimes called the College of Quadruple Force Units. The number four is much associated with Jupiter, as its glyph also looks like the number four. Four is the number of rounding out or perfection. Four, the number of rounding out or perfection. For its members wield four kinds of force. What kinds? In constructive magical work. Well, interesting, we might link this with the idea that Jupiter rules, it rules four signs. So let's see if we can find that. Jupiter rules four signs. It rules Virgo hierarchically, Sagittarius, orthodoxly, Aquarius esoterically, and Pisces orthodoxly. So are these the four kinds of force? Or are the kinds of force having to do with the higher energies of the energy system? Another name given to its halls. What is a hall? You know, it's a field of concentration in which this energy is particularly accessible. The palace of opulence. So there's fulfillment in every respect. The fullness of nature. Of any nature, fullness of any nature is allowed to manifest. When you see a triangle like Sirius, Leo, Jupiter, that is the import of such a triangle. It's the full expression. Now, with the seventh ray mode of will, the will to express, we see the importance of Jupiter, because whatever it is that's inside is allowed to come out and externalize. Jupiter does not hold in. Its graduates work with the law of supply and are frequently called the sowers. In other words, there was, from Ralph Waldo Emerson, an essay on compensation and how indeed it would be the universe or the local gods or whatever, wherever the higher powers may be that affect us, that always compensate any lack or sacrifice. So there is no end to universal bounty, but of course there's also excess. So this Jupiter is the planet of the life more abundant, and Christ came for a Jupiterian purpose. I am come that you may have life more abundantly. You may have life more abundantly, or the life more abundant. If they are called the sowers, it reminds one of Jupiter in mythology. He was always sowing the seed, sowing his seed, planting the seeds of divinity, and giving of his life and power to his offspring. So he was an all-pervading God, omnipresent, engaging with so many, and like the Manu in a way, impressing, like the Manu, impressing his pattern upon the substance of life by being the father to many. We don't know what these four forces are, but there are four etheric forces, that's for sure. And we can say Jupiter is particularly connected with the expansion of the causal body and with the Buddhic level and with the monadic level. So somehow it gives that which will finally create completeness, fullness. It can give ostentation and prideful demonstration. You know, you can think how Lorenzo the Magnificent and such people as he was displayed the glory of their possessions and their court. When you have Jupiter in Leo, it can indicate great display. But what has to be displayed or turned outward is the soul and all of its gifts. So there's a great generosity here as it works with the law of supply, but it also has to be careful, as we learn in the healing book about the types of disease caused by the different ray types, not to be excessive, not to give to all too much, too often. You know, if you want a drink of water, you don't have to be hit by a tidal wave to get it. So these outpourings, one has to think about the possibility of assimilation when there's a great Jupiterian outpouring. Well, all of us are bound for glory. Good sixth ray idea. All of us are bound for glory, and glorification is not only solar, but Jupiterian. So this opulence, this is to say the opulence of the aura, fully demonstrated, and no light hidden under a bushel. When it comes to Mercury on the fourth ray, looks like these schools are not in order, apparently. Are they? I think Uranus was the seventh, so it's not in order. The pupils of this planetary school are called Sons of Aspiration and Points of Yellow Light. The color fits very well, and when you think that Buddha, Taurus, Mercury, in a way all equivalent, and that the highest form of aspirational idealism is found there in Taurus, we can see the link with Mercury. The desire to travel to the high spaces and bring back what is found. They have a close connection with our Earth scheme. The name of the school is not given, but I'd say there are Mercurians among us. When you look at Master DK, you kind of wonder. He is so much Mercury, bringing the knowledge and energy of the hierarchy, restoring sight to the blind. We see that he is closely connected with Gemini and with this particular planet, maybe with other qualities too, of course. One just can't localize a master as only one thing. Sons of Aspiration are Points of Yellow Light. And They are connectors. And they travel so far, so fast, as to link distant places with the present. So they tie all things into relationship. Mercurians tie all contents of consciousness into relationship. Points of yellow light, yellow. Bringing harmony and illumination and mentality and reasoning and pure reason and intuition. So what is the aspiration? To be a son. To be a son. To, as it were, climb the Antikorana and enter the solar sphere. Mercury and the sun are one. So after the fourth degree, you know, there comes a point where the Antikorana, as it relates to the lower worlds, will end in the glory of the sun. And the little point of yellow light will enter the great brilliance of the revelatory sun at the fifth degree. So these are the ideas, and there's a whole line of students on Earth who are Mercurians in a way, and I think the Buddha is. It's my impression. Whereas others are Venusians, more like the Christ. I'm not sure what to say about Master K.H. Maybe he's more Venusian too. But he seems to have a strong quality of Mercury as well, kind of the blend of the two. Venus, the school with five strict grades. Strict and, what can we say, hermetically sealed from each other. The five initiations. And only those who belong to a particular grade can enter a particular grade. This is again a planetary scheme closely related to ours, as we've been seeing. Its planetary logos is in a more advanced group of cosmic students than is ours. Probably its planetary logos has taken the second major cosmic initiation for planetary logoi. Most of its hierarchical instructors come from the fifth cosmic plane. So our instructors can come from Venus, and their instructors come from the cosmic mental plane, and I would say much inspired by Sirius, which has its affinity with the cosmic mental plane. The idea of strictness, you know, there's a certain geometry, a certain pattern that has to be upheld. There's a magnetism which draws one forward step by step. But the grades, probably these five strict grades, I would say, are these five strict grades, the prototype of our five initiations, sometimes called major, beginning with the birth, not always called major, but we have the five. Five is such an important number here for its luminosity, the advancement of its ray lord, the inculcation of higher manas rather than lower manas ridden by desire or by illusion. I think that, you know, when I've looked at the sacred planets, I've wondered, do they have their causal body on the second level of the cosmic mental plane? Whereas those in our, among our type of students, may have their causal body only on the third level. I've wondered about that. A Venus is not easy. Sirius is not easy. Sometimes we say, oh, lovely Venus. Oh, wonderful Sirius. But they cause a great trial in our nature as we seek sensitivity and refinement. So we'll say that Sirius and Venus are not easy, submitting us to many trials in the search for sensitivity and refinement. Well, we've been talking about these planets for so long in various ways. They should begin to live for us, rather than just objects in the sky. Oh, where are they located? Oh, that's rising. Oh, that's that. That's Venus. Oh, that's Mars. One should come on rapport. You know, hail, brothers, and in that salutation of daring, his ego vanished. What is it like in your heart to feel as if a planetary logos is your brother, or a stellar logos, for that matter? Daring takes us beyond our ordinary rings pass knot of conception. Then there's Mars, of course, the school for warriors, or the open grades for soldiers. What does that mean? That anyone can get in? If proving your mettle. I was just thinking of this movie about gladiators. I guess it was called Spartacus recently. And, well, if you were going to get into the school, it was a life or death test. If you did badly, you died, and you just didn't get in. Maybe you could lose and still get in, but they tested you supremely. Rome really was under Mars. A number of early civilizations, before the civilizing effect of Venus took hold, those civilizations were under Mars, but Rome, especially with its connection, I think, with Aries and with Leo. Four of these planetary schools are responsible for the energies flowing through the four castes in all parts of the world. Well, Kshatriya, right? Maybe he thought about that. The Kshatriya. The warriors of India, a country in which Mars is exalted in its Capricorn nature. Let's say Jupiter, Brahmins, maybe. What about the mercantile class? Would that be Mercury, living through the exchange of goods and services? And then, of course, the untouchables. Untouchables. Well, normally you would think of, you know, this is Sudra. Is that Sudra? Something like that. And what is the spelling? No, that's Sutra. Or is it Sudra? Not sure. Anyway, something like that. The Sudra. And you would almost think about this being as a non-sacred planet. Is it Earth? Moon? Maybe. Maybe those are the warrior castes, the high religious caste, the mercantile class, and the untouchables, which would have to be a non-sacred condition. And we know, in a way, the moon is the outcast. It is cast off. It is the physical body. It's the least sacred of all. The moon, there's nothing sacred about the moon now. Now, of Mars, its teachers are spoken of as graduates of the ruddy flame. The color red is always associated, red associated with Mars, ray 1 and ray 6, two of the rays of Mars, as I conceive it, and are frequently portrayed as clothed in red robes. There are some countries where red is very, they're very fond of red. China is one of those, a first-rate soul country. They work under the first logoic aspect and train those whose work is along the lines of the destroyer. And we've, you know, I don't know why they decided to leave this out, but there's something here. I think it should be put in. No, that's not right. This is right. Ebony. Graduates of the Ruddy Flame, red robes, and why did they take this out? And carrying ebony wands. That should be put in, shouldn't it? From 1179. So this is an editorial choice, I don't think a good one. And carrying ebony wands. Black. Black, another color of the first ray, especially through Saturn. Red and black. And also connected with Scorpio. Is that not right? Connected with Scorpio. Because black and red are the Scorpionic colors. Mars may be a six-ray planet in its personality, but they're working under the first logoic aspect. They're working under the will. So obviously, Mars must have a higher first ray. I've wondered sometimes, does it have like a first ray soul, a fifth ray monad, and a first ray monad? 151. It does rule science as well. This whole military science. And there are so many engineers that are involved in the military. This is affecting a lot of six-ray people today. They're really seeking for the rise of the old masculine dominating energy. And it's a very dangerous situation because the ahamkara is involved, the pride is involved, right? The pride of being a man, the pride of being masculine, not realizing, of course, that one can be born either way. I've read recently of what's called hypermasculinity, and some that can be associated with Mars. It actually doesn't appreciate the feminine at all, even in the choice of partners. The Greeks had some of this. So it does obviously give spine, courage, fiber to those on Earth, of course. But Mars has reached its highest point, we are told, at least on the astral plane, and what was it, 1945, at the end of the World War II? And though it is certainly showing itself strongly now through the very close approach of Mars, reaching its perihelion, was it? Some 70,000 miles away from the Earth. That has an effect. It has to give way to Venus without compromising itself entirely. That's the point. We can't be rid of Mars entirely, not at all. Otherwise, we would lack the guts to make the approach to hierarchy. Neptune. And it's this, according to the sixth ray, with soul ray. The school concerns itself with the development of the desire element. In a way, well, is it the sixth principle or is it the second principle? It's certainly the second plane. And its graduates are called Sons of Vishnu. 1177, let's see. And why cut this out? Amazing that they've cut this out. Their symbol is a robe, the aura, with a full-sailed boat portrayed over the heart. Maybe, what can we say, propelled by the winds of spirit. Propelled by the inspiration or breath of spirit. The significance of which will be apparent to those who have eyes to see. It is a secondary monad. It is connected with the heart. It is connected with the spirit, because it's the monadic ray. It is connected with inspiration, the breathing in of a god, the intuition. It is a Buddhic planet, but also a planet full of desire, but the desire is generally to return to that great condition of harmony and unity and oneness in which all of the harder aspects of life do not interfere with the realization of unity, the attainment of the ideal. Vishnu is the second aspect, and with Neptune, it's not really the home of the planetary logos of the sixth ray. Interestingly, that's Venus. Neptune has a second ray, monad. Its esoteric ray is the second ray, Esoteric Psychology 1, page 420. So a full-sailed boat, inspired, beautiful, over the heart and guided by the Buddhic inspiration, propelled by the inspiration of breath of spirit, and also by Buddhic inspiration. And, you know, before we go to the stars, we go to other sacred planets. Where might we go? If we went to Neptune, what would be our destination? Venus seems to have much to do with the fourth path, leading to the fourth path. The second path, the path of magnetic work, seems to lead to the path of absolute sonship, from Earth to 2 to 7. We're told that those who are in the path of Earth service are fighting their way onto the path of the solar logi. Maybe Mercury would lead us to the ray path, possibly? The schools on these planets. I'm thinking about, well, there are other paths too, aren't there, on the way of higher evolution. The connection of the paths with the planet. Planet, path, and destination. Jupiter leads to becoming the planetary logoi. It leads to Orion, it appears. And Neptune? Would it be another way yet of becoming a solar logos? Or could it lead on to certain Devic paths, as Neptune is so refined and subtle, has to do with the hidden inspiration? Could it also, like Venus, lead to the path to Sirius, because Venus and Neptune are related as lower and higher octaves? Saturn, it seems. Well, we don't really leave the Earth to be on the path of Earth service, do we? But Saturn is, I think, much connected with this path of Earth service. Another thing, you kind of wonder about Neptune in relation to the path of Earth service, because the factor of identification is so keen in the path to Earth service. And Neptune is that planet which breaks down the boundaries between the rings pass knot and allows one to feel as if he is the other. You know, the story of the Christ and also Swami Ramakrishna. But with the Christ, you know, inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these, you have done it unto me. What incredible identification is there? So, you know, that's a theory. We've been given a little bit about Jupiter leading on to the path of the planetary logoi, and we've been given something hinted at Venus as it may well lead to the on the Sirian path. Earth, Venus, Sirius. There's quite a connection, and the solar logos is involved in that too. What about Neptune? And there are two higher paths, and are those two higher paths, the eighth and ninth, correspondences to the eighth and ninth initiation, which are ruled respectively eighth by 4 rays of attribute and the ninth by the 3 rays of aspect? Are they some kind of collective paths in a way? Are they in any way final? Does one of them or all of them, does it lead to the Pleiades? And is the Pleiades the final terminus within our supercosmic logos, our one about whom not may be said? The paths lead to the stars, no question about it, and probably to the very center. But then even that center, we know, is but one of seven. So we will find out when we are sixth-degree initiates and have to make a choice about the path that we will take, even though it perhaps should be the path that we have taken, the path of descent, I'm getting the feeling, should be the path of reascent. The schools on Saturn, the Sun, is it the Sun, really? Or is it some... The Sun and Moon are probably, in this case, veils. And on Pluto are not given, but complete the 12 planets. And I do think that these other paths, the Sun and Moon, are paths to schools on veiled planets. Well, friends, in a way, that's it. That's it, and that's not it. We have, beginning in March, early March of 2011, begun this process more than 300 hour-long programs ago. Some of the programs are a little fragmented. Occasionally the machine quit, you know. There are some truncations, and there are some that are a little longer. I suppose it all averages out. More than 300 hour-long programs. It will be a tour de force for anybody to listen to all this, and I'm the first one to say that there are variations in quality depending on how I felt or how my insight was working. Sometimes it may seem like I'm droning on. Sometimes it may seem like I'm not knowing where I'm going. Other times it may seem like I have the grasp of what's being said. But it was my intention to work through this magnificent book in a careful manner. Because you know how it is with these kinds of books. You read a little here, a little there. You read it once. Maybe you read it twice, but you read it superficially. But here we are, word for word, phrase by phrase, sentence by sentence, line by line, paragraph by paragraph, page by page, chapter by chapter. Have to laugh, you know, meticulous entirety. Or, as my friends say, ridiculous entirety. The disease of the first ray. They have to take a special kind of medicine to help them with their process. They call absorbitol. And there's another joke there too that I'm forgetting, but it's pretty good about the medicines the second ray types have to take. My work is mostly is a combination of the second and the third ray, I think, pretty much. The meticulous nature is the second ray, and the ramifying to find out the more abstract relations is maybe more the third ray. And, you know, it is my great hope that this is of some value to you. What drives a person to do something? You know, I have this passion for completeness. I have this passion to see the hidden vision as it is. The quality of the hidden vision, the second method of inducing soul control. Can a vision be important? Yes. It can make the difference between life and death for some. A vision can extricate us from our preoccupation with lesser identifications. And if we begin to see the big picture and see how that big picture is actually related to us, it's a joyful thing, because we get the feeling that release is possible and that we can take advantage in service of all those energies with which we are connected anyway. And we'll know how to do that scientifically. We'll know just what to choose to assist, and we'll know the timing of things. And we'll be able to live scientifically, yes, but also beautifully, the art of living esoteric astrology will help greatly with the art of living. But as you've seen, of course, we need not only esoteric astrology, we need rheology, and we need esoteric psychology and healing, and we need what the Tibetan has written, and we have to assimilate that as much as we can, possibly. Now, what I'd like to do, you know, I'd like to do some more astrological work. I don't know the timing of it yet. I'd like to go over with you the different planets in the signs and planets in the houses. I've done the houses, more or less, and the signs have been our constant attention, but what do we do with those planets, and how do we treat aspects in our chart so that we can get the best out of them and not just in a knee-jerk manner interpret them in some mundane manner? I'd like to do that, of course. And I have all these notes on the Egoic Lotus, which is a very astro and rheological study, very synthetic study. And I despaired of ever writing a book about it, but I'm not despairing of talking about it, even though you may have to look at a bunch of colors arranged in a manner that would give seventh-rate people fits. But not being the seventh-rate type, I don't have to worry about that. And, you know, maybe someone will come along after me and kind of organize in a better way what I have presented. I'm trying to present correlations, links, and that these links will cause a flashing forth of the light of illumination, the light of intuition, and that the many unlinked contents of consciousness will fall into a natural pattern which will be reflective of how things really are in the archetypal worlds. Now, obviously one struggles with that, and one makes wrong estimations and goes down various byways and paths that maybe don't lead anywhere, but every once in a while you hit gold, you know, and something clicks and you say, aha! How many ahas, how many eurekas do we have? I can think of maybe a few I've had when I've done this out of all the many words that have been spoken. So I will move on, and I will work with the rays and initiations and the last part of Cosmic Fire, which is, in a way, you know, a synthesis of the whole book, and so maybe it's, I have to be grateful that I didn't do the last 100 pages, ran out of steam or out of time, and in a way it's my favorite part. And a number of these things that I've had to talk about are coming from those last pages. And maybe also, you know, it sounds a little more mundane, but it would be nice to do something on physiognomy. It's very fifth ray in a way, and rather artistic. I remember going to a museum in New York, and I think there was an exhibit of, was it Hans Holbein? He was a great portraitist, and somehow he had drawn the portraits of those who were in the Tudor families of England and the Elizabethans. I studied the faces very carefully, because the face, in a way, you know, it's like the causal body, it's like the monad itself. Or at least there's something there that remembers that. So I'll try to work on that too, and I'll try to work on the old commentary for dessert. Maybe, you know, eat dessert before the main meal. Eat dessert first, life is short. So while I have done the work on the law of repulse, I have not yet done a number of other old commentaries on the Blessed Ones, that is the seven monadic types and the integration formulas and the seven methods of merging with the solar angel and so forth, all according to the rays. Amazing stuff. I try to memorize that, you know, to keep it in me, learn it by heart, but I've never analyzed it in any careful, meticulous way. I'd like to do that too. So, those are the things I'd like to do in the immediate future, and of course, I'd like to get those, I'm talking to you like a friend, right? I have my music, with something like 16 rituals where I've done all of the vocal parts to them, not the singing parts, but the oratory. And all the singing parts have been accomplished. Harold Moses and I are working on these, and maybe by the time you read this, 50 years from now, or see this, they'll already be out there, so you can use them. But in the next few years, I'd like those to be available, because I think there are some people who might find meditatively and ritualistically that they, and thoughtfully, I must say thoughtfully, that they offer something. Those are my plans. It'll probably, I don't know, could take 10 years. Try to be alive for 10 years or so. I'd like to make it through 2025, you know. Seems to be a target date for many of us. Another 12 years to go to that time. The world will go through a great deal, I think, during that time. There will be a withering of the law. You can already see it happening. And an uprising of lawlessness on all sides. And then the harbingers of the great Lord will come. The great Lord may not come immediately, because there's so much to do first, but who knows, things can occur fast. Yeah. The masters have to establish themselves in the various cities and be attended to as great sources of goodwill and of expert advice. Can that happen in 12 years? Well, I've read several times the reappearance of the Christ. Maybe I'm just going to close this whole thing with that. You know, it's He will come. He will come and wave. You should do it. That'll be it, and I'll close with the great invocation after doing. I know this last one will be a little longer, but I didn't see the point of just starting another tape. Not a tape, a program. Well, what's going to happen here, you know, when the task of preparation of men's minds is further advanced, and when the knowledge of the existence of the masters and their hierarchical endeavor and of the united hierarchy of our planet are a commonly recognized truth, and when active goodwill is recognized as a real national asset in all lands, then the speed of the externalization of the hierarchy will be greatly increased. Then the five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form and will call also for recognition. The groups they are working will be known, and they will also be in close touch with each other. From that time on, the network of initiates and disciples under the direction of the masters will be worldwide, and in every field of human experience, the opinion of these men and women and of the masters presiding at the five centers of their affiliated groups and in their affiliated groups will be regarded as of immense value by all governmental, economic, and social organizations. Then, under a great wave of spiritual inspiration, the divine spirit of expectancy for the reappearance of the Christ will sweep through the world. It will then be regarded as credible and creditable, and his coming will provide the germ for all world hope. The reason for this will be that the most respected, enlightened, and cultured people on the planet will be looking for him, and then, my brothers, he will come, bringing new energies of love and compassion and implementing the spirit of fresh enlightenment. To these important events must be added the new revelation for which all men wait and to which they will be able to respond owing to the need and new stimulation. Well, it's so inspiring. Page 698 and 699 of Externalization of the Hierarchy. And then, friends, the Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. So, my friends, on to the next, and love to all of you. Study hard.